Okay, it's a beautiful morning. It's not very cold at all, and there's a big bright moon out. It's nearly full. It was full a couple of days ago when I was out camping. It was throwing light everywhere, and it was amazing as usual. And but in all cases, I had to wake up and get going before the sun had practically arisen, so I didn't get to compare how the moonlight affects the sunlight. That's for later in the season. I haven't really taken a chance to walk in amongst everything else that's been going on. So the last recording, I talked a lot about Western Governors University, and there really nobody who's done it preaches anything but positive things about the place, about the system, about how it goes. So I am really very heartened by the whole thing. I prayed some over the thing, trying to get some confirmation from God, but it seems like almost a no-brainer, because if God would say, well, duh, you make the choice, and the choice is pretty obvious. I can't depend upon experience, and frankly, pretty constrained experience alone, to get me over this hump, to get me beyond this plateau. I need to do something, and this is pretty much the option that presents itself to me. I don't think there's, I don't think you need to pray about going to college. I think that's a no-brainer. Of course you need to go to college. The prophet's already said, you need to get as much education as you can. And I need to lead out. That's what leaders do. Lead out and be an example. If that means ultimately getting my PhD, I don't know how I'm going to physically do it. I don't know how it's going to get paid for. But we will confront that bridge as it approaches. First things first, I think we've got a distinct possibility for getting the master's done. And in good time. Woke up this morning, and I got really tired of listening to the radio while I was in Crucis, because right now the Supreme Court has decided to take up almost every piece of legislation on the matter of the status of gay unions, and I found myself struggling to find for myself justifications for my own position. And not that I was abandoning my position at all, but that how can I overcome the calls of fairness, the calls of why are you treating us so atrociously, bigotry. It wasn't affecting me directly, but it was being very effective at stifling my arguments against it. Well, this morning as I was thinking about it, it became very clear, and I thought about these ideas before, but it never seemed to kind of coalesce behind this, and it's already starting to feel like to me there's going to be a... It's going to be yet another essay. When I said, Jay, you're going to be going to college, you have time for essays. You don't have time for those kinds of things. It's definitely going to have to be more along the line of, you know, a creature of compulsion. When you feel compelled to say something, that's when you need to say it. And the title of it would have to be, God Can't Bless America Now. If these, you know, presidents, one of the great taglines of all presidents as the national cheerleader is to always proclaim, God Bless America. And... many presidents have done questionable things, but none have directly thrown themselves in opposition to God. This is the first time Barack Obama, his first original thing was to keep his, to stay out of it, which I think is wise. I'm sure many people pushed him to what his decision has become, which is the wrong one. Personally, professionally, and for the nation. He's decided which side he's going to come down on. And I'm sorry, I think he needs to turn back in his Christian card. He needs to... he needs to declare that he's a religious pragmatist and that God is meaningless to him, for he is. Number one, Barack Obama has never been a strong person. Never been a strong person. And that's sad to look upon. He'll say, oh, he fights so hard for this and for that. And you go, no, he doesn't. You go, he's a poll taker. That's what got him to the point to where he was supportive of gay marriage, was the fact that he thought it was a winning issue for he and his party. And that he's perfectly willing to throw God's commandments and God's desires under the bus. Because of an atheistic rant. I don't think he really believes much in God, because he must not believe in God's wrath, which is what is being courted at this time with the whole Supreme Court stuff about gay marriage. I was listening yesterday morning with sadness that the Defense of Marriage Act, which was passed and signed into law, but now is being challenged in the Supreme Court, And the basis of the challenge is a person's ignorance and the fact that they don't feel like they should be punished for their ignorance under the law, that the law should be changed so that they can go on being ignorant. This is a woman who had married another woman and was under the impression that like with any married couple, all of the assets would fall to her at the death of her, quote, spouse. But it became a question of had to pay taxes on it. Apparently it was quite sizable. And that she feels like she has been dealt with unjustly, that it's unfair. I call it ignorance of the law. That even though your state recognizes your marriage, doesn't mean the federal government did that. Like any regular person, you should have sought legal advice when faced with end-of-life things and how you are going to handle them. The distinct smell in the air from it was what recently has come to light about Rosa Parks, that the honored incident in Selma, on the bus in Selma, was not what was always touted, where she was getting off of work, she was tired, and she didn't want to go sit in the back of the bus where the black people were supposed to go. That we found out recently that it was a setup, that it was planned and staged, that this was going to be the linchpin moment. It wasn't simply a happening, it was a planned incident. And what this smells like was, this smells like a planned incident in that there's very few people that pay estate taxes on anything, that have so much huge assets that they get trounced on them. The estate tax on it, trust me, was a percentage of what she ultimately got, which was huge. And everybody seems not to want to say that. They want to portray this as some rickety old woman living on a pension, perhaps, and that she was stuck with this huge tax bill, and you go, this huge tax bill came from the fact that she was getting huge assets. And it does. It smells like a setup. It smells like something that somebody said, we need to have an incident that attacks this. Of course, it's been long enough now that people could have staged something rather easily in the intervening time. And somebody who had the time and money to pursue this, that this wasn't some poor person getting pooped on. This was a rich person with an agenda, and probably a pretty large constituency, lawyers and activists behind her, pushing this thing forward, and quite likely we don't know anything surrounding the death of this other person. For all we know, it was a young person, AIDS death. You know, this comes from the fact that gay people, when they choose to couple long term, they instantly become quite wealthy compared to everybody else. They have no family responsibilities particularly. There are no children to raise. There's nothing like this. They are often quite wealthy because of this. And I know that doesn't want to be brought to light, although I don't think that's a very strong argument. None of the arguments are particularly strong and damning. It's just that this wouldn't have happened under normal circumstances. Anyway, so all this has come up. The Defense of Marriage Act is probably going to end up being thrown out because it looks like the swing vote, one of the older ones, the ones that have been on the bench for a long, long time. He's making statements about the unfairness of it, so it's getting reasonably sure that DOMA, as it's called, Defense of Marriage Act, is going to be thrown out, the one that defines marriage as a union between a man and a woman. And that would open the doors for so many things. And which comes back to my original title for the essay, which is, God Can't Bless Us. God Can't Bless America Anymore. It was getting dicey there. This is an actual government statement in opposition to the will of God. This is just a bald-faced out there. What God has prohibited, we have made legal, and we have, and our president, I don't want to wish ill of anybody, but I don't envy him his time in hell. Facing God and saying, you turned on me. You turned on me, you ingrate. It says, I'm going to see you burn. I'm going to see you burn. And you can make all the excuses you want to. You can use all your flattering speeches while you're on fire. And I've got better things to do than to listen to this claptrap. And this from a man who went to a church and everybody questions the Christianity of the church he attended. I don't know. I'm not, like I said before, I'm not a Christian in the Christian sense. Gladly not these days. Glad to be a Latter-day Saint. Glad to be a Mormon. It's safer ground to be on. Calling yourself a Christian, I don't know if that even helps. I don't think God will think much of it. The wishy-washy way Christianity kind of plays the political card, sticks its finger up in the air trying to get new parishioners or trying to remain relevant, and deciding that women are going to have the priesthood if you even bother having a priesthood. I just don't. And So yeah, how on earth could God possibly bless America anymore? And when the president gets up and says, God bless America, it's like, oh, God. It says, how dare you? How dare you say to God that he needs to do this when you have spit upon him and ignored him? Because President Obama, he loves to blame what he does on circumstances usually caused by previous administrations. And he still used it during the campaign. 4 years later, he was still using it. I said, what? What a childish person. Please don't call him a man. There's no manliness here. Child. And those things he promised to reverse, things he promised not to do, he's not doing. He's still not doing it. When he says, oh, the troops will finally be out. I said, yeah, 8 years later. But we need an orderly going out. And you go, I can do something orderly in about 6 months. He says, you have not. He says, because you use the rhetoric of it as a tool to buy votes. And you have yet to close down anything. Look, the easy one, Guantanamo Bay, close it down, do what you said you were going to do, hasn't been done. That's not pulling 100,000 troops out of a country. That's simply closing down air base. There's nothing to it. Sorry, naval station. A decommissioned one in the first place. So, this is not a man. This is a political creature. And I'm sure he expects to use that in his defense before God when God says, you stayed out of the fray. And when there was a political point to be scored through gay marriage, you threw yourself behind it as a supporter. To the point that the Defense of Marriage Act, where the executive should have a lawyer there fighting in its defense because it was an executive branch that fought to get it, or it was representing the government's interest in having passed this law. He actually has lawyers on the other side for it to be declared unconstitutional. I don't think you can easily come back from those activities, from those decisions, and say, hey, you understand how it is, God. This is a political ploy. I was there to buy some votes. Come on, you understand that. And you go, no, you went beyond that. You went beyond that, and you made your bed with the gays. You go, therefore, you shall sleep in that bed. You'll spend significant time in that bed. And it's going to hurt. And it's not going to be pleasant. And you will pay the price for having done that. Your reverend right from your youth, most likely a political decision made to garner you some votes among some constituency that you attended that church in the first place. So you didn't listen to it. And of course his most poignant statement that came out as the opposition was trying to harm him was Reverend Wright's statement, God damn America. I can say it here because this is not being broadcast over the airwaves. which is probably far closer to the mark of what we can expect God to do. That this is not a man who has read the Old Testament with any kind of conviction at all, knowing that God is a wrathful God on those who turn on Him. I was just telling Lisa this morning, says, don't forget that as Israel was traveling in the wilderness, being humbled for the most part, and being taught to depend on God wholly, that's what the whole manna experience was a lesson in. Is putting your full trust in God, that even if things go bad, He will feed you. That there's only two roads to that. Either it provides a blessing as you submit to God's will. In this case, they were fed instead of dying. And that was a lesson to be learned. With God, you live. Without God, you die. And I know that seems way too graphic and so much of our world doesn't have to at this time live by that tenet. We are being given great, as far as I'm aware of, we are being given larger latitude due to the obedience of our progenitors. It seems that God blesses many generations for the obedience of their parents. And that's what we've been steadily feeding on for hundreds of years. But that God will But that because of our actions, because of these sorts of things, before there was even the Ten Commandments, this is really basic law. This was before the Ten Commandments. Was, thou shalt multiply and replenish the earth. Gay couples can't do that. And you should leave your mother and your father and cleave unto your wife. Gays don't do that either. I don't care how they try to twist it. Very obvious how the program goes. Go cleave unto your wife and have children. Gays can't do that. And to behave as if they have the same status. So they go, well, I feel like a second-class citizen. Said, you should. You are not fulfilling your basic societal role, nor are you being obedient to God. Says, how can we possibly treat you any differently than you're treated? Does God love you? Yes, but God's love is manifested in His desire that you stop doing this and that you turn a better course. And it's very simple. As I've said in, I think, most of the essays now that I've written on the subject of gayness, and it seems to be a big thing, although I don't want it to be a big thing in my life. It just keeps popping up, and it must be, you know, it must be addressed. That you can repent of the behavior as simply as you can drop a dime on the ground. You can do it as simply as that. Every day, people get married for other reasons besides the sex was good. that all that all of the stuff that's been built up around trying to venerate and respect gayness, that's what's at its root. I choose a perverse form. It is not even really sex. Well, no, I can't, you know, I don't even know how to define sex because they're so enamored of the fact that what they do is just as good as sex. I said, sex leads to children. See, what you're doing is not sex. Can't lead to children. What it leads to is AIDS and other strange diseases. Lots and lots and lots of government funding to take care of your strange diseases so that you can live to continue to court strange diseases for the rest of your life. When they say AIDS isn't a problem in this country, no, it still is. More and more people are getting AIDS. It's just that it's not killing so many people so readily and so quickly anymore. So at a huge social cost. There are so many reasons not to respect gay people. Of course I don't. It says, and this present effort, this whole effort at gay marriage, is the largest and the most damning one of them. Those gay people who want to think that they're good Christians or good Mormons or whatever relationship with God that they say that they have that makes them, you know, that puts some kind of sheen of purity on them. And it's I'm sorry, I put it right up there with those obnoxious scripture chains, which I totally reject. As a way to get somewhere, as a way to get some to some attitude, usually one that's a little askew. I'm sure there's a good scripture chain that justifies God's love of gayness because people swear up and down that God made them that way, and I steadfastly refuse to say that. I will not say that. I will not support such a doctrine. Giving in to the natural man has always been the road to destruction. It has always been a sin. And that's all gayness is giving in to a desire to have sex, not even to have sex, to be pleasured, to be genitally pleasured. And giving into that, and then building all this will around it, all these rationalizations and justifications for why it should be considered a good thing to embrace the natural man. It cannot be. No twisting of the scriptures can justify these acts. No one can be gay and be Mormon. People say, I'm a gay Mormon. You go, no, you're not. Yes, I am. You know, you've got a choice to make. It's either you're gay or you're Mormon. cannot be both. Strategic impossibility. Can't be done. You have to make your choice. Hello, bunny rabbit. Oh, this rabbit's just sitting here. I think he's just stunned into stillness. Well, so yeah, so God, with this going on, God can't bless America. God certainly can't bless Barack Obama, our leader. God can't bless the legions of people that seem to put more honor in him than they do in their God. We already have far too many people that seem to want to give him some sort of a pass. To say that we can trust him, and you go, how can you possibly trust him? He's selling you down the river. If you follow the path that he lays out, you're going to be damned. You're going to spend a sizable part of your afterlife being punished for your sins. And that sin is being in opposition to God. And that's an obvious one. Why bother being a good person when you've sinned to this level? Why bother even doing it? We should anticipate what happened to the Nephites once they rejected God. Totally. That they were taken with, that they couldn't hold on to any of their stuff. They would bury their treasure in the earth, and then when they went back to get it, it wouldn't be there. I think that's a good thought for those who invest heavily in gold and things like that. So don't bother. Said your gold isn't going to save you. The prophets have never told you to buy up all the gold. They've told you to store food. If you're buying gold and you have not stored food, well, you can't expect the blessings that come from obedience to God. So it's just as simple as that. If you've got your food storage pulled together, then I guess you can buy gold. It's your choice. It's your money. But just know that your gold's going to die with you. I don't think it's a question of sin particularly. It's a question of you just haven't paid attention to what God's been saying. But that's not really going to be useful when push comes to shove. Better to use your money for other things. Better to spend your money in the establishment of Zion and the building up of the kingdom of God on the earth. Better those things. Well, regardless of that, this stuff will help me in the future as I get to that point. When you become an influential person, these things start getting more of a hearing. That's what I hear from my patriarchal blessing, is that I'm going to be one of those influential people ultimately. Right now, I need to simply get to the point to where I can be influential. And the biggest stumbling block to that happening is my lack of educational credentials. Not educational, but my lack of established credentials. So I need to get first my master's degree. And then, most likely, going to go after my PhD. And we're just going to have to see, when the moment arrives, when that's going to happen, how that's going to happen, and what that future is going to ultimately look like. Right now it looks as if I'm going to be working on for all I know I'm going to stay right here, except that I'm going to really have to almost immediately push the button and get a better job, whether it's with New Mexico State, getting a big promotion, or whatever, so that I can work on a PhD in something. I don't know what it's going to be in. And I'm going to have to seek and pray and seek the Lord's blessings all along that way too. But for now, let's do this. And we're probably going to have to almost immediately transfer. I was thinking, boy, you can just stay right where you are, Jane. You go, no, I can't. I need to get the payoff from the master's as well before I attack a PhD. And like I've said before, I don't think a PhD is going to necessarily be in anything technology related. Perhaps it will be. I don't know what the circumstance will ultimately be. But I think you get to generalize a bit when it comes to a PhD. And I don't think it's going to be with an eye toward teaching at a university. I think it's going to be with an eye toward taking up a mantle of leadership. I'll be really honest. Most of the apostles, and I'm not saying I'm going to be an apostle on any level at all. That's not something one can even begin to aspire to, because that's not how you get there. But when it comes to leadership, most of your leaders have PhDs, and that's simply it. It can be a PhD in almost any subject under the sun. It doesn't matter. But that just ends up being the ticket to ride. It's like everything else. When I got off my mission, I was working at McDonald's and newly married. My thought was that I needed to do better than that, and that was what compelled going to college. Each step of the way, each step as I went further and further, it was usually compelled by the fact that I needed to do better than this. There was more in life for me than that, and that each step of the road was a ticket to ride. And I need to continue to do that right through my PhD. This is a ticket to ride. So, we need to go after those tickets. I made that big thing. I was thinking about Brenna and how she needed to be a little bit more responsible about her life, and that we were, I think our tendency as parents is to coddle these guys. So I was saying, you know, Brenna, you should be going off and doing this on your own. You can drive. You know where the office is. I don't think they plan on doing anything besides just looking at your thing and poking around to see if there's some kind of a disease going on. But beyond that, you're not doing anything else. I don't know why I'm taking time off to go and help you with this. You should be able to do it yourself. And so to say, oh no, I don't know if I can drive in that place. And you go, Brenna, you're going to have to figure out a way to do it. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to let her drive. I'm going to let her do the driving. Take care of other things as I go along. But she's going to have to put up with me. And that'll be good, because the next time she'll go, oh, no, I don't want to take Dad with me. And you go, well, then you'll have to do it yourself. And you go, oh, okay. And then I need to be a better example of that. And that's what going for this master's degree is going to do. And ultimately probably getting my PhD. Is to say, these are simply tickets to ride. I need to make more money than I do, number one. But number two, to rise to my potential, I need these things. I need all these things. And the quicker I can get them, the more likely it is that I'll be able to, number one, accomplish it, and number two, fulfill my foreordination, you know, that noble and great one. I think I'm doing okay, working on trying to be a noble person. Now I need to put some effort into being a great person. That the times of the past when somebody could become great off of a high school education and a little bit of initiative, those days long gone. And me thinking that I could do the same thing, hoping someday somebody would give me an honorary degree in something, is just silly. That's almost prideful in a way. No, it's probably as prideful, just period. And so, I need to humble myself. I need to go. I need to do this. All the things I said about, well, I don't want to get wrapped up in some kind of weird orthodoxy. And you go, Jay, with the master's you're getting, that you don't have to worry about orthodoxy. And the way you're doing it is competency-based. It's not philosophical at all. And you go, so I think you're somewhat protesting against this. And that may be something to consider when going after a PhD program, is to say you need to get a PhD in something more to do with competency than with a certain way of looking at life. Although I like anthropology, and I may still go after my PhD in anthropology. But we will do it based upon, or whatever needs to be done, upon the basis of technology. I think anthropology is easy because it simply says, you know, it is the study of human activity. Actually, it's the science of ology. which I don't even know what that is. But I don't think anthropology runs along those lines anyway. I don't think it gets scientific as much as it gets. Tries to get down to understanding. Why do we do what we do? What is technology supposed to be? Should we regulate it? Should we not? So, we'll see where all this goes. But for now, network management. Let's get ourselves to that point, and then we can look at the PhD and how we're going to get that done. One that basically is the writing of a dissertation, a scholarly dissertation, how this is to be accomplished, is mostly what every PhD ends up being about. I don't know what, I would not know what to call it. I don't think it really ends up mattering. What matters is that it's a PhD. Whether it comes from Harvard or Cambridge or... I don't think I want to get a second-rate one. As much as it's doable and within the realm of getting things done, one wants to get a PhD, so it may mean that I have to move back east with this master's degree and get on as one of the technology leads at a big name school so that I can try to pursue a degree there, and hopefully it will be part of the benefit package that I can do this without great pain. Because that's what we're essentially after. To be an expert in a certain field so we can teach it later? That's something to do after your power maybe has ebbed, but it seems like mine will not have. Because it seems to be I will have a strength of purpose beyond my normal years. So that might be kind of the road ahead, is making that thing work. So here's my family. Here's my wonderful family. Please, it's so wonderful. We really love being around each other. And she's a quiet strength to me. Sometimes I wish she'd just kick me in the butt, but frankly, I think she's worried about making me mad at her. And I don't want to do that. So, I guess my whole point is, that we need to rely upon God. And our number one strategy for doing that is to, it seems like today, and it's a sad and pathetic way of looking at it, the biggest thing that we need to do today is just not piss him off. And I know that's kind of a low talk, but I think the times require low talk. Because that's what we're doing. We're sitting in God's face, and then we turn around the other day, well, we know that God's going to stand by us because we're exceptional. We're amazing. And you go, I think that's for God to say and for God to reward. And I think you look as foolish as the children of Israel did, who thought that it was their heritage to be blessed. and it's not. It's never a heritage to be blessed. It says the blessing comes from your righteousness. There may be some interesting blessings held in store for a lot of things. But you can't be evil, or you can't court evil, or come out in direct opposition to God and think that because God blessed your nation in the past, that he is at your beck and call to bless you again. But as you start to be destroyed by something or someone or whatever, that God will let that go. Don't think for a minute that that's so. So, here I am. Slowing down and wake up. Make sure she's getting ready for the day.